This latest reaction of Pyongyang does make me feel like that looks a little bit more troublesome and as if it won't happen.
North Korea voices opposition to new sanctions. It's Tuesday, December 18th. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Myanmar women are being trafficked to China. Australia sharpens its Middle East policy. Saffron is suffering in Kashmir. It's all on today's VOA Asia. North Korea has turned up the rhetoric heat, criticizing the latest U.S. sanctions targeting three North Koreans for rights abuses. The foreign ministry expressed its shock and indignation and accused the United States of being bent on bringing relations back to the status of last year, which was marked by exchanges of fire. It warned further such sanctions would block the path to denuclearization on the Korean Peninsula forever. Washington last week announced that three North Korean officials, including a close aide to North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, were being sanctioned over rights abuses and censorship. Harry Kazianis, director of defense studies at the Center for the National Interest, tells VOA's Victor Beatty the prospect of another U.S.-North Korean summit appears uncertain for the time being.
On the one hand, you have North Korea making sort of veiled threats once again, which is one of the reasons the Trump administration got very upset with North Korea. It was actually one of the reasons they canceled the Trump-Kim summit before we eventually had that in Singapore. So I think the North Koreans need to be very careful here. But at the same time, you have other situations that actually make me feel that things are going really well. We've had a number of South Korean-North Korean initiatives, so, you know, taking apart mines, whole sections of minefields, working to demilitarize the actual demilitarized zone. So there has been some good inter-Korean progress. At the same time, Kim Jong-un did not make his visit to Seoul, which he was supposed to do really in the last 2 weeks. So reading the tea leaves on North Korea right now is very, very hard. There's a lot of good and a lot of bad, and usually at the end of the day, that usually doesn't bode well.
On Friday, President Trump indicated he's in no hurry for the denuclearization of North Korea.
That sounds like President Obama's strategic patience policy. And it's funny because that was one of the things that Donald Trump was very angry at and did not like that policy. But it almost feels like very, very surely and very slowly we're almost moving back to that same posture with North Korea. The United States doesn't seem like it's in a hurry to offer a lot of concessions to Pyongyang. At the same time, Pyongyang doesn't feel like they want to offer a lot of concessions to Washington. And it almost feels like we're going back to where we were back in 2011, 2012, where no sides were talking, but at the same time, the North Korean nuclear threat keeps getting worse and worse. They're able to build more missiles, more nuclear warheads, and that itself is concerning.
There's been much talk about a possible second U.S.-North Korea summit, but the two sides have yet to even to reschedule working-level talks.
Yeah, that is concerning. I mean, this latest reaction of Pyongyang does make me feel like that looks a little bit more troublesome and as if it won't happen. I think the real point for having a summit is there would need to be some sort of leap forward. Both sides would have to be willing to give something. But the most important thing at all here is we cannot expect this to be fixed in days, months, even years. Both sides have to build trust in order to make bigger concessions.
The South Korean news agency Yonhap reports U.S. Special Representative on North Korea Policy Stephen Biegun will visit Seoul this week to find ways to salvage the denuclearization process. No meaningful discussions have taken place since U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo visited Pyongyang October 7th. A meeting between Pompeo and his North Korean counterpart Kim Yong-chol in New York on November 8th was postponed. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Malaysia charges Goldman Sachs two employees in 1MDB probe. Chinese get chances to invest in Vietnam despite political rifts. U.S. and China trade barbs at WTO amid calls for reform. Expanded coverage of these stories and more can be found on Facebook at VOA Asia. You'll also find quite a bit on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Thousands of women and girls are being trafficked from Myanmar to China and forced to marry and bear children. That's the finding of research led by the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health and the Kachin Women's Association of Thailand. VOA's Asia's Ira Melman spoke via Skype with Cortland Robinson, associate professor at the Bloomberg School and the report's lead author. Dr. Robinson was asked if the report held many surprises.
I think we were surprised at the proportion of women, roughly 40% of those we interviewed who had been married to a Chinese man were currently or formerly married within the last 5 years, experienced forced marriage, and a smaller percent, about 23%, I believe, experienced trafficking into forced marriage, which involved some kind of deceit in the context of being recruited into a marriage or transported or harbored in the context of moving into China or being somehow deceived into a marriage that they did not understand the full kind of dimensions of. I would also add that we found, whether in forced marriage or not, but more particularly in a context of forced marriage, quite high rates of intimate partner violence, controlling behavior, physical and sexual violence, and psychological abuse. So all of these tell a story of real vulnerability.
Do you have numbers to tell us how major a problem this is, aside from each individual situation?
We have estimated that there are approximately 10,000 or so women in China currently living just within one area in Yunnan province, who by our estimations are either now or have been within the last 5 years a victim of forced marriage. And over the last 5 years, about 7,500 or so women have returned from China and are living in Tientsin State or Northern China State, who have experienced forced marriage sometime in the last 5 years and returned. Now, there's a subset of that who've experienced forced childbearing. So about 80% of the women in a forced marriage have had a child. So that was one of the clear drivers of the arrangement, that people in China, because of the quite significant male-female sex ratio imbalance, about 120 males per 100 females on average across the sort of at the national level.
The report makes several recommendations to reduce forced marriages in the region. Among them, the government of Myanmar should institute policies to protect Myanmar residents and would-be migrants through the issuance of personal identification documents that would provide them with proof of citizenship and nationality and enable them to obtain travel passes and work authorization in China. And that the Chinese government should allow women, girls, men, and boys fleeing the conflict in Myanmar to access safe refuge and humanitarian aid in China, thereby reducing their vulnerability and being exploited and trafficked. Australia will recognize West Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, but will not immediately move its embassy from Tel Aviv. Prime Minister Scott Morrison will also acknowledge the aspirations of Palestinians for a future state with its capital in East Jerusalem. We hear more from Phil Mercer in Sydney.
Australia says it won't be moving its embassy in Israel to Jerusalem, but could do so in the future if the city's status is finalised under a peace settlement. In October, Prime Minister Scott Morrison said he found arguments in favour of moving Australia's diplomatic presence from Tel Aviv to be persuasive. He denied his comments were an attempt to influence Jewish voters in a crucial by-election in Sydney. There was support from the Israeli government, but Palestinian leaders said Australia risked becoming an international pariah. A major trade deal between Australia and neighbouring Indonesia, which has the world's largest Muslim population, has also been jeopardised because of speculation Canberra could move its embassy to Jerusalem. The decision not to relocate the Australian embassy should ease some of that diplomatic pressure, according to Daniel Flitton, managing editor of the Lowy Institute's Interpreter, a magazine produced by the Sydney-based think tank.
That really depends on the reaction from the rest of the world as to whether or not this issue continues to dog the government. There's a difference between when a United States makes this decision and the rest of the world reacts, because the United States is a big power.
Last December, President Donald Trump overturned decades of US neutrality when he recognized the divided city as Israel's capital, prompting widespread condemnation. It led to the Palestinian Authority cutting off dialogue with Washington. At the time, the Trump administration said it was strongly committed to achieving a lasting and comprehensive peace in the region. The American embassy was moved from Tel Aviv in May. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Coming up, a spice that needs water. You're listening to VOA Asia. This news from VOA Asia: Malaysia has filed criminal charges against Goldman Sachs and two former executives for their role in the alleged multi-billion dollar defrauding of state investment fund 1MDB. Malaysian officials were allegedly bribed into picking the bank to underwrite $6.5 billion in bonds. Goldman Sachs received $600 million in fees. No fee needed to visit VOA Asia Facebook. As VOA Asia continues, saffron is one of the world's most expensive spices. It roughly costs $4,000 for 1 kilogram in India, and it's mainly cultivated in Kashmir. Kashmir is considered one of the three prime locations for saffron farming due to its terrain, soil quality, and weather. However, due to unpredictable changes in climate in the last couple years, saffron production in the Kashmir Valley has been in decline. VOA's Zubair Dar and Yusuf Jamil have more on this as Bejan Hamdard narrates their report.
The long and silky saffron filaments are the three deep red threads of the saffron flower. These are carefully picked from the flower by hand. Each kilogram of saffron is derived from about 150,000 such flowers. Pure saffron sells at high rates in Kashmir, but saffron production has declined in the last 2 years due to severe change in temperature.
There must be at least 3 rainfalls in a year for good saffron yield. This year, we didn't receive even 5% of the rain we normally get. The biggest problem is lack of irrigation. The saffron flower blooms in October through November. It must get plenty of water before that.
Located on the outskirts of the capital, Srinagar, Pampur is the valley's saffron district. Nearly 90% of the cultivation of the exotic purple flower takes place here. It is said that saffron has been growing in the fields of Pampur for close to 2,500 years. Traditionally, Pampur would host a harvest festival after a successful crop season, something the area has not seen in a few years.
In the event of a good crop, a festival would be held here. Everyone would be celebrating and be happy. But the saffron cultivation has suffered enormously during the past 2 to 3 years. You can see beggars take more flowers than I could pluck.
As if that was not enough for the local farmers, Kashmir's saffron is now facing fierce competition in the Indian markets.
Ever since the saffron from overseas reached Indian markets, the Kashmiri produce has lost its demand and grandeur.
Experts say that approximately 120 to 160 kilograms of saffron was being produced per hectare of land in 2005, compared with just 12 kilograms last year. This year, the production may come down even more. For Zubair Dar and Yusuf Jamil in Srinagar, this is Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook and our website, voanews.com. You'll also find us on the radio, like Falcon Radio at Adamson University in the Philippines. Thanks to everyone there who tuned into our program today. Our thanks as well go out to Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Aidan Utku, Managing Editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team. That's Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're all in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead.